broken glass. Seven years of bad luck, you got things in your past.
Entered higher ground, and shame on you if you are not up already enjoying this beautiful Saturday morning in Champaign, Urbana. You are listening to yours truly. Sister Carol is in studio this morning, and I'm glad that you have awakened in the right spirit today. we are going to have a couple things. I'm going to open it up for you to talk to me today. And so the first hour, we'll kind of recap the Illinois, what's going on at the state level. You can certainly call me and ask me anything you'd like. You can do that by calling 217-359-5483. I am here to serve you and to answer your questions to the best of my ability. That's why I'm here this morning. The second hour, we'll talk about some local stuff, local races coming up, local issues that might be important to you. Update on some very wonderful announcements we've had on the local side. Change is good. And so we'll talk about that in the second hour, Brother A-Dub, and our graduating student who's been mentored for this last semester by Brother A-Dub. Yemi will be here with us this morning. And so they'll come in about toward the 9 o'clock hour. So I just want to let you know that you will hear the illustrious voice of Brother A-Dub at some point during our broadcast today. You are on higher ground. I thought I'd throw in a second Stevie Wonder song this morning because I was just all into Stevie Wonder. And his live selections of Higher Ground and Superstition, which is the last one I played, that's how you get your Saturday morning started. So I just want to make sure that you know that this hour and the next is sponsored by Kevin Elliott Counseling. And I'll come back in a little bit and tell you more about Kevin Elliott Counseling so that you can reach out to them. And I also want you to know that you can also, you know, consider becoming an air shifter. There are great benefits to being an air shifter member of WEFT. It doesn't take much time. They train you. They teach you how to do it. You can sub on shows like Brother Aaron and I did when we first started down here at WEFT over a decade ago. I can't even believe it's been a decade of time that we've committed on Saturdays to WEFT and to this community to share news and views that I think you can use. But it's been that long. But if you're interested in learning how to plug into WEFT, they offer classroom training times. There's going to be upcoming training on May 3rd and 4th. In addition, you'll have two studio sessions scheduled. So you'll learn in classroom and you'll get right into the studio so you can learn how to do it. You can pick up an application here at the station, which is 113 North Market Street, on our website at weft.org, or you can email airshiftertraining@weft.org. For more information, you can call Vicki at 217-778-1664. That's 217-778-1664. So Vicki can help you get started if you have questions. I can tell you from my own personal experience, it's probably one of the funner things that Brother Aaron and I get to do, and we get to do it together, so we're not separate in this issue. So we enjoy every bit of sharing things that we've learned and talking to you. So it's a very early Saturday morning. I have just the pleasure of going to a wonderful baseball game that my son will be playing this morning at Dodds Park. So if you're up and you love baseball and you want to watch a fun game, you can meet me and Brother Aaron at some point out at Dodds Park. I think the game starts about 11, but you can come out there and, you know, spend a little time, watch a great baseball game. Brother Amir will be playing today. He'll be on the field. So he's gotten much bigger than probably last time you all have seen him. So you can come out and watch him do his thing for Urbana at Dodds Field today, which I think Dodds Field is the one right west of Mattis Avenue, Parkland area. That's Dodds Field. So you can come out and join us for that. We've had a interesting week in Springfield. As you know, the budget impasse is the biggest part of this issue. If you didn't get a chance to look, you can certainly catch up online. There's a brief piece that I did with Representative Tim Butler. It'll be on Capital Connections on Sunday morning at 10:30. If you're home and on your way to church, or maybe you're finished because you go to church early, you can watch Capital Connections. There's a brief interview between myself and Republican Representative Tim Butler over the last week, the speaker's comments that he gave on the floor after the leaders meeting, which didn't go very well, apparently, and the looming closure of Chicago State University is on the horizon. We are all very, very concerned about this. And so we could talk about some of your questions, what you've seen and heard over the last week in relationship to the state budget. I can answer them to the best of my ability. And you can do that by calling me at 217-359-5483. Or you can call 217-359-6545. Now, let me just explain that you can always call in and ask me something other than that in my hour of this show. So you don't always have to talk about the state issues if you're not interested in that. But you're certainly welcome to. I want to cover a couple things that did happen this week that you might be interested in. One of them, as I mentioned, Chicago State University is actually looming, unfortunately, on closure. And they're not the only ones. They're just the tip of the iceberg because of the budget impasse between the General Assembly and the Illinois Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. It could force the state's only predominantly African-American school, largely black students attend Chicago State, to close its doors. And that is really, really a problem. So as of earlier this month, the staff, academic and support staff, were giving not only notices of discontinuation, but that they needed to turn in the property of the university by the end of April. So that's April 30th. In less than 15 days, Chicago State University, after over 100 years, may face closing. The Chicago State's reserves have run out, so they've used everything that they could to keep the school going through this semester so that students who are enrolled currently can complete their programs and other students can find other alternatives for next semester. The university has been operating off its reserves that's now down to about $9 million. They only have enough to operate the 7,000 student body university for two more months, which means that this was a couple months ago we got this report, and now we're actually at that time. So we have 14 days to save Chicago State University. Now, let me tell you that the members of certainly that represent Chicago State have put before the General Assembly numerous bills with funding, emergency funding for all of the universities that don't have a healthy reserve that they can work on until the budget impasse is settled. So we've tried at least two or three appropriations, emergency appropriation bills to save Chicago State, Eastern, Western. I think Northern has some difficulties in the next few months as well. And so all of those we've attempted to do emergency appropriations. Each time they have been blocked by the Republican members of the House and the Senate. And their response has been that, you know, we need to give the governor his turnaround agenda and put that in the process before they would give us an emergency appropriation. That has been the biggest struggle over the last several months. The serious partisan divide that has taken place at this point over all of the previous governors, there has never been a governor that has chosen to hold the budget hostage to a degree where you cannot make appropriations to basic services of the state. Human services, education, natural resources department, senior services like Meals on Wheels and other programs people depend on. This is the first time in a long time where we've had a budget impasse that has lasted nearly a year. And I would project that this will go into the next fiscal year with no budget come July. There's no path forward because the governor continues to say that we need to give him the reforms that he wants, which are not actually tied to the budget. All of these are political reforms, turnaround, term limits he wants, which is something that people are working on, but that actually has nothing to do with the budget. He wants some control over collective bargaining, which is a union right to bargain collectively for their wages and their working conditions. That is their right, but he wants to be able to do that. He has stalled out and cut out health care services for home care workers that work with seniors in their homes to save the families money from having their loved ones in nursing homes or long-term care facilities when they can stay in their own homes. So this issue has grown enormously, and it just doesn't seem as if there's any real focus on coming to an end. So Chicago State, with its 7,000 students that began in 1867, is going to unfortunately close at the end of this month if there is no saving the budget for Chicago State. So next week, we have 1 week of session left for the rest of this month. And if that week of session does not produce an appropriations for Chicago State, for Eastern Illinois University, all of the struggling colleges and universities, public colleges and universities in this state, if we cannot come up with a budget appropriation that the governor will sign, this 1867 school will close. That's what's going to happen. And that's quite unfortunate. And it has long lasting political implications. So I want to let you know that every opportunity that we can, meaning the Democrats have tried multiple things outside of destroying the public unions to save these universities. I'd like to hear from you. If you're up and listening to Higher Ground at this point, I'd like to hear from you what you believe we should do as a step to not only save Chicago State, but our seriously fledging human service industry is also being decimated. Each time I listen to a conservative talk or someone on the right, they talk about and they tout about how many people are leaving the state because they won't give away all these freebies to these business communities. And I argue just the opposite. People are leaving the state because the state has forgotten about regular people in this state. That's why people are leaving. They can't depend on the security of their employment as a public employee. They can't depend on resources for childcare. I think people are leaving the state because it is a state that has become unfriendly to the people that reside in Illinois. Many of us have grown here all of our lives, like me, and I've never seen anything so disheartening to the average citizen as I've seen in the last several months. And so, the organizations that are struggling, like Chicago State and all the other, institutions that have closed their doors, those who serve, victims of sexual assault, they are struggling to, and they're providing services, by the way, with no money and a contract signed by the governor's office. So even though the governor, who refuses to pay people, continues to sign contracts for agencies to provide these services in communities across the state, he then refuses to pay the contracts. So he gives them a contract, they provide the services, and when they attempt to get the money to pay their staff or keep their doors open, they refuse to pay the contracts. So this is going to be a continuing problem. What is it that the governor wants? The governor wants, in order to get a budget, he's trying to force the legislature to pass a pro-business agenda. Now, let's say very clearly that the General Assembly is not the Democrats, I should say, because the Republicans are not on the same side of this issue. But the Democrats in the General Assembly are not anti-business. What they are concerned about is some of the reforms that the governor wants to make. He wants to ram through and bypass the legislative process. So what he really wants to do is say, here's my proposal. And if you don't vote on my proposal, I'm not going to give you the money necessary to run the programs within your district is and specifically within the state. So that's what he wants. So he wants us to pass what he considers as a pro-business agenda. That's what he wants. That agenda, though, includes some reforms in workers' compensation that I don't believe if we took a vote, every Democrat would be against. Some support, some don't. He also wants us to create right-to-work zones at some point. He's taking it, as he says, off the table. But each time we turn around, he's talking the same language without using the words right-to-work. He wants to cut out programs and change eligibility further for child care services and elder care. He wants to not fund the MAP program, although he continues to say he does. But each time we attempt to fund the MAP program, he vows to veto it. But he continues and says that I am pro-education. He has introduced through his members higher funding, he calls for K-12, that doesn't deal with the gross inequity of education funding in the state of Illinois. So if you live up where he lives, they spend about, you know, a little over $30,000 per pupil to provide them education in a public school setting. If you live downstate smaller communities like Cairo, Illinois, or East St. Louis, Belleville, Illinois, if you live in those communities, where they spend maybe just over $7,000 per student. So his, what he calls equal sharing of the revenue and the increase of revenue for K-12 that will give more money to communities and school districts that have high property tax support, they'll gain more money to provide greater resources for children who already have a lot. Where that same splitting of the money, so to speak, as he calls it, sharing the wealth equally across the state, the children down in East St. Louis, although may gain a couple hundred dollars extra, they only spend just above $6,100 per pupil in the community because that community is property tax poor. I can't imagine how that could be equal. So that's what his plan is. And so there's legislation in the Senate that's being discussed right now. On the other side of that, Senator Andy Menard is working diligently on reforming the formula so that we can move money through the state budgeting process to those struggling school districts more than those who aren't struggling. I'm interested in hearing what you think about this. I know we're coming up close to the 8:30 time, which I'll take a break at 8:30. So if you want to give me a call at 217-359-5483, that's 217-359-5483, I'll be happy to take your call, answer your question about this or any other topic that you're interested in, and feel free to give me a call. I also thought about this. I said, you know, this week we had several other pieces of legislation that were very important that we did pass. I'm working on myself. I have several pieces of legislation that I'm working on. One is a Medicaid reform legislation for people who have to sign up for Medicaid. They shouldn't have to have a PhD to fill out an application to get Medicaid and choose an MCO. The MCO is the Health Alliance type of organizations that you have to choose now since they changed the Medicaid system to have a third party in the middle. And so out of that process, people are certainly low income people are having difficulty navigating the Medicaid system. And so we put forward a bill to correct and make some of that a little bit more consumer friendly. And also to, you know, do a comparison on the Aetnas, the Blue Crosses, the Health Alliances of the world. So people can find out up front what they cover and what they don't cover. And that's where they usually get caught up in the healthcare appropriation crises that people find themselves in. And so, you know, we wanted to make that process easier. We did pass that legislation. I have an amendment that I'm doing next week on the Medicaid legislation so that we can get that to the floor. And I hope to get that passed really, really soon so that come January, if the governor signs it, we can make that process easier for people to select an MCO when they sign up for Medicaid. That way people will stop going to the emergency room because they're still uninsured. That is a large problem in our state. A lot of people are still not on the Affordable Care Act. And unfortunately, in some cases, the Affordable Care Act is too expensive for people who can't afford it, which is a whole nother meeting, a whole nother discussion. But that is what that's one of the pieces of legislation that I'm working on still. We did pass a piece of legislation this past week, myself and Representative Camille Lilly, which is for victims of sexual assault, and allowing them to also take up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave if they're working in a smaller business, not a large corporation, but a smaller business. The average person only takes maybe 6 weeks off, but you know, most people, and that's for maternity. So most people can't afford to do that, but we wanted to make the option available because people suffer severe trauma as a result of being sexually assaulted. And so we passed that in the House. It was interesting debate, from the right on that piece of legislation, but it did pass. I'm also working on a prison phone justice, piece of legislation that I intend to pass in committee, criminal committee next week. That bill is going to remove the kickback that the state of Illinois receives to make a phone call from any of our state prisons in the state of Illinois. So that piece of legislation is to remove the kickback, which really should be illegal. You know, as a legislator, if I put out information to someone who wants to contract with the state, and I say, hey, I'm only going to give you this contract if you give me the highest possible commission. You know, I probably have a cell next to Blagojevich somewhere, but for some reason, the state of Illinois thinks that this is an appropriate and legal thing to do. And so they've been practicing this for some time across this country, and the FCC has finally stepped in to help the families of incarcerated people so that they can afford to talk to their loved ones who are inside and help them to motivate them to get out and change their lives. But this is a very difficult piece because the Department of Correction, who's opposing my bill, of course, says, well, we're doing good things with that money, and if you take it away from us, we don't know what we'll do for these inmates. Well, they didn't always have this commission going to the Department of Corrections. It was going to other state agencies before all of the money was just last year appropriated to the Department of Corrections. And I think we are to give them the appropriate general fund appropriation to take care of the inmates inside, but the family should not have to suffer and actually, in essence, be taxed twice just to talk to a family member who happens to be incarcerated. Most people don't tend to care very much about those who are behind the wall, so to speak. But there are great human rights issues connected to this. And I'm an advocate, certainly, of human rights and the protections of our community inside and out. And so I hope to pass that in the Judicial Committee next week, working with Danielle Chenoweth and Brian Doliner from IMC through MAGNET and CMJ, which is Center for Media Justice. And so we will testify and lobby next week. There's going to be lots of lobbies next week. And I'm looking forward to all of those who will be visiting me in Springfield next week. So if you're not busy, feel free to come over to Springfield and lobby with other groups. Or just come over and visit and see what we're doing. I would welcome your visit. At this point, I'm going to take a small commercial break and go back to Kevin Elliott Counseling, as I promised at the beginning of the hour. Kevin Elliott Counseling Group has 30 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including state employee insurance, is accepted. There's also self-pay sliding scale, so if you can't afford it, they'll help. You can contact Kevin Elliott or his staff at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That's ELLIOTT CounselingGroup.com. Or you can call them at 217-398-9066. That's 217-398-9066. Kevin Elliott Counseling will be happy to hear and help you. So give them a call. Let them know if they can be of service to you. And we appreciate all that Kevin Elliott Counseling does in this community, and we will continue to support them in their efforts. I think I'm going to take us a music break, and I'll be back with you guys in a moment. So let's see what we can do with Stevie Wonder.
Call that you play. What is an instrument that you play? The cajon. Cajon. I want you to play a beat on the cajon. Play it, man. I want y'all to clap your hands. A man gotta do what a man gotta do. Sometimes, not all the time. A man gotta do what a man gotta do. Sometimes, not all the time. Say it, fellas. Say no, 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 hell no. A man gotta do what a man gotta do. Sometimes, sometimes, I said a man gotta do what a man gotta do. Sometimes. Time. Fella, say it, say it. Ladies, say it. A man got it. Fellas, fellas, say it, say it. Do, 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 do. No, 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 oh no!
let's hit it, y'all. Let's hit it.
Sister Carol, and I'm back on Higher Ground with you. And you was listening to Stevie Wonder. I just really had a Stevie Wonder moment this morning, so I just thought I'd play another Stevie Wonder song in the break. And I'm back now, and I'm certainly hoping you've joined us here on Higher Ground. And it is a beautiful Saturday morning. I told you I'll be going out to Dodd's Park today at about 11 o'clock and enjoying the baseball game today, watching my son play his first baseball game. So we'll be doing that today, and you are welcome to come out if you want to talk to me there or want to talk about what's going on. You don't want to call me this morning, although you can at 217-359-5483. That's 217-359-5483. You can call me and ask me anything you'd like to talk about with either this or about the General Assembly or local stuff, too. I keep up with that, believe it or not, while I'm away. And I'm only home right now on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. So I want to come and spend some time with you this morning. So I'm at your disposal, 217-359-5483. And I'm certainly willing to talk with you. For the next 4 minutes, I do want to play for you. If you did not get a chance to hear last week, the speaker actually make a historic statement about the budget impasse. I'd like to share that with you and then open the lines again at 217-359-5483 to get your feedback. It's quite an interesting speech. So I'm going to play this speech for you, and then I will be back. Let's get it going here.
The governor has staked out a position. He has said, I want my diversionary issues, I want my non-budget issues, and then I'll talk about new money for a budget. That's the governor's position. We in the House have attempted to meet the governor halfway. The governor has talked about workers' compensation. The House has passed a bill that would do changes in workers' compensation. That bill is in the Senate. That bill could be amended. There could be more changes done to the workers' compensation system. I acknowledge that. People on this side of the aisle acknowledge that. But, we are not going to use the government to force injured workers to welfare or to the emergency room. Let me repeat that. We are not going to use the government to force people, injured workers,
bring this impasse to an end on behalf of everyone.
The governor requested a change in the method of operation
budget
Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. The governor wants to take the decision-making away from government people and give it to people in the private sector.
Just for one second, I think I've pulled the video that was the previous one. I wanted to pull the one from April 12th, so I think I found the correct one. And we'll try this again, although that was a good one, too. It's pretty much the same. But I think the latest speech this past week on April 12th is quite revealing. This is the speech that happened immediately after the four leaders met, and this is the speaker's response to that.
Participate in the passage of the bill.
House
and today,
Republicans voted against.
Again.
The governor vetoed the spending plans, rejecting funding for the state's most vital programs, serving countless families across the state, including funding for sexual assault victims, medical care for the elderly, breast cancer screenings, homelessness prevention, and mental health services. The governor chose to veto this critical funding, even though the state constitution provides that he may reduce or veto any item in an appropriations bill. We know that the governor understands this provision because he used his line item veto power to remove specific items from a capital bill while allowing other parts of the bill to become law. It is regrettable that the governor did not extend the same consideration to vital state programs that help sexual assault victims, the elderly, and potential cancer victims. Since the governor's vetoes, numerous bills and amendments have been brought to the floor of this chamber as renewed statements of the priorities of House Democrats. With few exceptions, the governor and his people in this chamber have rejected those funding plans.
I'm here.
Even in the case of 911 services, motor fuel tax revenue for municipalities, and appropriations from federal funds, it took a great deal of time and effort to convince the governor to move off of his personal agenda. The governor's objections to House Democratic budget priorities are based on his insistence that the General Assembly first pass his personal agenda, which is targeted at diminishing the wages and the standard of living of the middle class and other struggling families. It's true that we need to do more to create good-paying jobs with good wages in Illinois and improve our economic condition. But progress will not be made by targeting the wages and the standard of living of the middle class and others who are already struggling. So, we have had and we will continue to have our differences. But differences with governors is not new to me, nor is it something that has prevented me from working with governors of both political parties for the good of the people of Illinois in passing state budgets. over 30 years. I have worked with six governors from both political parties, twice as many Republicans as Democrats. We didn't always agree on the issues. We didn't always agree on the best approach to passing the state budget. I had differences of opinion with all of the governors that I've worked with, including governors of my own party. And let me repeat that, including governors of my own party. Many of you will recall the very strong differences that I had with former Governor Rod Blagojevich. However, we found a way to compromise. My record over the years is one of compromise. Regardless of the governor or his political party, to pass a budget that does not withhold the services that the people of Illinois depend upon. It is my openness to compromise that I stated more than a year ago, and why I continue to believe that to solve the state budget deficit, we must take a balanced approach. The spending plans approved by the legislature almost a year ago took that approach, cutting hundreds of millions of dollars without decimating the vital services that Illinois residents, children, and the elderly depend upon. Like the governor's own budget, ours was not fully in balance. But we publicly acknowledged that, and we have been prepared to address that. Over the last 13 months, compromise has been very difficult to achieve. Never before has the state gone this long without a budget. Every other governor that I have worked with has negotiated with the General Assembly in good faith to help the people of Illinois and to ensure that the people of our state did not needlessly suffer. The fact is, the current budget crisis was completely avoidable. While this crisis was avoidable, Governor Rauner has refused to put an end to the crisis. And some of his remarks in recent years clearly indicate that this has been his plan from the very beginning. At the Tazewell County Republican Party's Lincoln Day dinner, March 2013, Governor Rauner said, and I quote, "Even if Democrats got a major majority against us, you know what? They can't stop us. They won't stop me if I want to dramatically spend less. You need the legislature if you want to spend more. If you want to spend less, they can't stop me." And I apologize. We may have to go through a little rough times. If we have to do what Ronald Reagan did with the air traffic controllers, if we sort of have to do a do-over and shut things down for a little while, like universities and social service providers, that's what we're going to do. My view of the important role of state government, which I have argued stands in stark contrast with Governor Rauner's view of the role of state government, as shown through his comments, has not changed since I first took office. State government has a vital role to play in working to provide needed services for those who need them the most. You will even find that the few times that Governor Rauner has set aside his personal agenda that hurts middle-class families, we have been able to compromise and move our state forward. That is why I will continue to make my top priority a budget that takes a balanced approach to prevent the most critical state services from being decimated by personal political agendas. I support the passage of Senate Bill 2046 and the critical funding for needed services that would be provided to the people of the state of Illinois. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I recommend an aye vote.
That was the Speaker of the House, Michael Madigan, on April 12th, just this past week, doing a speech that he had written in response to the lack of movement with the four leaders. And it's interesting because one of my colleagues who I did the Capital Connections, which will be on tomorrow at 10:30 a.m., his takeaway from that was, well, it's not really fair because he pre-wrote that speech. He wrote that speech ahead of time, which means that he wasn't willing to compromise. But I would imagine that, and I don't know because I have not spoken to the speaker at all, but I would imagine that when they gathered together, you know, we know when we walk into a room with someone who of whom we have difficulty with or difference of opinion, whether this person has opened themselves up to another point of view or not, you could tell that right away. So it doesn't take a lot. And if you simply follow the governor on his campaign plan tours that he does, as opposed to really governing at this point, if you follow him around the state, all he does is the same thing. He says the same thing all over the state, and he continues to tell school children that I'm trying to fund your education, and at the same time refuse to actually fund the education. So I thought the speech from the speaker of, and I didn't know he was actually going to do that, so I was really surprised. I think most of us were surprised. We knew he was on the floor and that he was going to say something, but we had no pre-warning that he would be delivering a speech at that time on last week. And so it really caught all of our attention on both sides of the aisle, as it's usually not quiet in the chamber. But it was so quiet that you could hear the pin drop on the carpet. And that was a real moment, I believe, because the speaker has done, you know, few press conferences, and he's spoken in Chicago on the budget issue, but he hadn't spoken from the floor to all the members on the budget issue since this has started. And so he had a brief presentation that I had played a segment of at the very beginning of the budget impasse, but he hadn't spoken since that time. And so that was our first time hearing what his perspective was and what they can't seem to get together on in these budget meetings that they continue to have. So the battle for the budget is obviously not over. It unfortunately will continue because the cuts to safety net services are continuing under the governor's administration. And regardless to what the people are saying, the people are making very little impact in the decision of the governor's office administratively whatsoever. So we see a lack of jobs. For a governor who's supposed to be a jobs governor, we've lost more jobs under his administration in the last 10 months than any governor that we've had. And it's quite interesting that they don't count all of the social service employees as jobs for some reason, or psychologist services, or, you know, all of the hundreds of jobs that we lost at Lutheran throughout the state. And for some reason, he doesn't count those as jobs. So someone who's supposed to be a jobs governor seems to be lacking a lot of jobs. Low level business investment, small businesses closing. I can go on and on, but I think my time of my first hour of Illinois legislative affairs is coming to an end. Because Brother A-Dub is joining me here this morning in the studio with Yemi. I promise you that both of them would be here. And they are here, and they're on time. So if I had a clap button, I would clap for them.
Early.
And early, yeah. Look, 5 minutes early to be exact. So it has certainly been my pleasure. I know you are just waking up drinking your coffee. I've drank mine an hour ago. But we welcome you into this conversation on WEFT Higher Ground. I want to read again that you can be an air shifter just like Brother A-Dub and I. We've been on the air for over a decade. I can't believe it. over a decade. We've been on the air here at WEFT. And there are great benefits to being a member of WEFT that you can take an air shifters training for free. A new session is coming up, so we want you to figure out how to get in one. You can pick up an application here at the station at 113 North Market Street. Or you can contact us on the web at emailing airshiftertraining@weft.org. You can do that and get on the air with WEFT and talk about things that's important to you. Or you can simply call Vicki at 217-778-1664. That's Vicki. That's Vicki Nicewinder, I believe it is. 217-778-1664. And I was really, really enjoying Stevie Wonder today, so I think I'm going to take this last break at the top of the hour here with another Stevie Wonder song. I mean, we had fun with that. I hope you did, because I certainly did. And I want to give you a rendition of Higher Ground with Sting and at Roxanne. So I'm going to do that, and then when I come back, we'll have our illustrious brother A-Dub in the studio. So you just stay tuned. Hold on. It's always a, you know, commercial on this stuff. I'm trying
from
to
the very it, beginning. Let me. So you're the one
we're
your baby
trust. Here in a second. There we go. I'll be right
Hallelujah. I wouldn't talk down to you. Told you.
We're back. Don't y'all love Sting?
Yes, indeed. Stevie that song reminds me of 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy when he was in 48 Hours and he was sitting in the cell. Rosie, you don't have to. So listen, this is Brother A-Dub, y'all. I'm in the building. Having a good time down here. Always at 90.1 FM on your listening dial. This is Higher Ground. Hoping that my brothers and sisters and mother and father and family and friends and cousins and sisters and all that stuff are listening in. I know we're getting ready to have a full day. You know, the brother been up since 5 already, been to the Breakfast Club. Yemi is in the building with us. He has been at the Breakfast Club with us as well. And we do have a couple of announcements we want to do to start off, to kick off this second half of the show. Sister Carol.
Well, I thought you were going to do the 26th announcement first.
Fine, I'll do that. There's this one lady, her name is Representative Carol Ammons. She's the state representative of the 103rd District. She is hosting a roundtable discussion on the decriminalization of cannabis. Decriminalization of cannabis, which means legalized weed. I just wanted to just say it for the people to make it plain. You know what I mean? State Representative Carol Ammons, Reverend Alex Sharp from Clergy for a New Drug Policy. I want to say that very clearly. Clergy for a New Drug Policy. That's right. There are ministers and pastors and reverends and all kind of folks who say, look, we need to do something different about this failed war on drugs and its impact on our community. Dan Lynn from Normal, Illinois. They're going to all be a part of this panel discussion on April the 26th. The doors open at 5 p.m. The roundtable discussion begins at 6 p.m. This is going to be at the Accord, 51 East Main Street in Champaign. Certainly going to have to get the representative to do some events in Urbana because there's a lot of stuff in Champaign, 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 because I represent Urbana. And Urbana was first. You know that, right? You know.
Was it?
Yes. Huh. I was doing my mayor Urbana pressing also. Impersonation. it's actually Urbana-Champaign, not Champaign-Urbana. So, again, y'all should come out April 26th. Doors open at 5. Roundtable discussion begins at 6 o'clock. This is one of the hottest topics in all of the state, definitely around the country. The legalization of cannabis, which could create millions and millions of dollars of revenue. You all listened, I'm sure, to the State of Illinois piece with your representative earlier this morning. You have to generate revenue. You know, when you want people to get paid more, you mm-hmm. want the firefighters and the us as union workers and everybody to get raises in their wages, but you don't, and you want your social services and services to stay intact, that money has to come from someplace,
sure.
right?
Yeah,
and so what legislators and local legislators end up having to do is either to raise fines and fees and taxes or cut social services. Where else does the money come from, right? So you have to generate revenue in your city through businesses, but you also have to find revenue in forms of, like, instead of locking people up for and giving them mandatory minimums for marijuana and other low-level drug possession, you have to find different ways. And regulation and control of cannabis is one of them. That we are working on locally as well at the state level.
Well, you know, we decided that we would host two meetings that day. One of them is actually for local clergy. Clergy will come from Danville, Champaign, Urbana, Decatur, I've invited clergy from even Rantoul. We really need to broaden the conversation around the decriminalization and the in essence the reform of the sentencing laws that's really driving a lot of this. So we want to do that. And because Clergy for a New Drug Policy is truly led by clergy, they're not, you know, I would say bastions of liberal wildness that, you know, most people just assume that that's who we are. But the reality is that this is a national conversation. And as a matter of fact, I just had an opportunity to listen to the Democratic debate yesterday evening, because I missed it. And one of the conversations was to remove marijuana from the schedule altogether. That way states don't have to play around with this patchwork of what we should do kind of thing. So I think there needs to be some serious conversation. So we are going to host a luncheon that same day with local clergy to talk about the impact of the drug war on Black communities. Most of these pastors are representing large Black congregations, and why they should take a look at this, not just from the decriminalization side, but what states need to do. So it's really time for us to end the drug war, stop playing around with people's lives, yeah, locking people up for 20 years, 25 years. We got to reform mandatory minimums, and we also need to really put pressure on the federal government to remove marijuana from the schedule. So states can help with that. Just like local governments can send resolutions to state officials send resolutions to federal officials. Mm. And that's what we do when we pass resolutions asking the federal government to do something. So we will be having this discussion with our community and clergy on the 26th. I thought Yemi was going to say something, Aaron. Like,
oh, no.
Just want to make sure that you get the flow.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like double dutch. You got the opportunity.
You got to jump in. Let justice roll down like waters.
I agree with everything you're saying right now. Weed isn't a big offense, and it needs to be reduced because there's people who are going to jail for a numerous amount of years for a few grams of weed. Maybe got caught a couple times. And I think it's good that Brother Ammons got the fine down from $300 down to $50.
Yeah, that's a great step in the right direction. And we want to ultimately zero that out. And Brother Aaron has started that process.
So, and I should always say that, you know, it's one thing for a particular legislator or an alderman or whoever to champion a cause or to sponsor a bill, but you always have to get those other votes. And so Eric Jacobson, Charlie Smythe, and Dennis Roberts were the other three votes that gave us the majority to actually pass that. And then once the others, like Bruce, like Bill Brown and Diane Marlin, saw the writing on the wall, then they joined the effort of the lowering of the fine to $50. So you always have to talk about your colleagues who also supported your initiative, because you can't get it passed by yourself. Yeah. You know, what I did have a couple of quick things that I'd like to share. These were stories around this issue of marijuana, and you know, and so I got a phone call. You know, sometimes you don't see all of this stuff until you start talking about it. Then people want to come and tell you their stories behind it.
Yes,
I got a phone call from an old friend, and she said that she was stopped, and this was in Champaign. She was stopped in Champaign. And it turned out that she was stopped because she turned left, and instead of staying in the left lane, she turned in the right lane.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why they stopped.
Cross lane.
Right? Immediately, dogs show up with the officers who pulled her over for such an egregious offense at 11 o'clock at night. You know, no one's in danger or anything like that, right? It's just a reason to stop her. And so they stop her, and they proceed to, I don't know if there was some issue, I don't know if they smelled marijuana or whatever, but they ended up searching the vehicle. They searched the vehicle, she said, for about 30 minutes. They found a stem, a marijuana stem, with a little nub, a little small piece of marijuana connected to it. And she said it was so small that, you know, she thought they were just going to throw the stem out. And so after sitting there in the car, whatever, they came back and gave her the ticket. She was like, what is this for? They said it's a ticket for possession of marijuana. She's like, possession of marijuana? Yeah. And the officer proceeded to tell her, she said, that I could have gave you this $340 fine for a seed of marijuana.
Wow.
Right? $340 for what she said probably amounted to a dollar's worth of marijuana. Right?
The stem.
Right. And so remember, no ticket for
crossing the lane,
for turning into the right lane instead of the left lane. See, that's just a pretext for an investigatory stop. So let's see what we can find. And even if we only find a stem with a little piece of marijuana connected to it that amounts to about a dollar's worth, here's this $340 fine, right? For a person who's working, who's barely, you know what I mean, like, not barely getting by. I don't know all of her circumstances, but she's a working class person with responsibilities. And so she look, I'm trying to raise the money. I got up to about $200 she had saved, and she borrowed the other $140 from a friend. She goes in to make the payment the day before she's supposed to go to court. and the person tells her, no, you can't pay that. You didn't pay it within the 2-week period of time. So now you have to go to court. And so what's going to happen now? Now the $340, the court cost is going to get tacked on to that, which is probably going to be somewhere around $150 or more. So now this dollars worth of marijuana for being stopped for turning in the far right lane, it's going to turn into a $500 fine on poor folks, right? And of course, she just happens to be African American.
If that the right? if that's the case, then there should be a police officer at every turning lane. Being,
I mean, that's what they did. That I mean, it's mind-boggling, but. That's why we are saying we're aggressively attacking this issue. A lot of people, you know, they don't understand why we are fighting this issue, Brother Aaron. And you know, of course, you know me. I haven't indulged in any kind of smoke at all. And so you would think, why would she care about this issue? I care about this issue because 2.3 million people are incarcerated in this country. I care about this issue because over 50% of them are there for drug-related offenses. And in, if you look deeper into their drug-related offenses, some of them are users, right? Mm-hmm. Addicted, stealing things so they can fund their addiction because there's no mental health treatment. Or they're distributing because there's no economics. And so on those communities that are least engaged in the economic structure, don't have the opportunities. And even some of the young people that I work with that graduate with advanced degrees, it takes them up to a year to find a job. So just imagine a person who may have dropped out or just have a high school diploma. So this is a larger social framework that we have to attack. It's not just about marijuana possession. That's the tip of the iceberg. And when you look at the entire industry, you'll see the forfeiture issue on the horizon, taking people's cars and property because they found a small bag or two of some substance. This has been the drug war itself has truly attacked communities of color, and communities of color has, I believe, felt ill prepared or almost like they can't respond to it because it's the criminal justice system, or it may appear that we're advocating for drug use in some way, which is the alter argument that we hear. Yeah. And so our communities are really silent about what's happening to their families, the incarceration, the shame that comes along with incarceration. So we actually need to fight this on the tip all the way down to the bottom of that and follow it all the way down.
You know, Cliff Thornton, who we have introduced to this community on several occasions, often raves on Facebook and other different places like, where is the black community on this issue?
Why have we been
so
silent?
You are the most affected by this and you're the most silent about it. Stand up and take a position on this and fight back. So let me just continue. Same young lady says the second incident, this one is in Urbana now.
Wait a minute. So she got pulled over. She got a ticket, major court fees, and she gets stopped again?
This
is March, late February, early March, late February, and then this other ticket is mid-March that I'm getting ready to describe now.
Wow.
In Urbana this time, driving down Goodwin Avenue going north, turns right onto Bradley, going about her business. Actually said she was going to her mom's house to get a plate. Her mom had cooked some greens. She says she sees the police officer get behind her. I got license. I got insurance. I'm not speeding. I ain't doing nothing. Hits the lights at about around Lincoln and Bradley. She pulls over. Okay, what's the deal this time? She said, look, after the last incident, I done vacuumed my car out. I'm just trying to make sure I don't have no issues, right? They pull her over. Officer, why are you stopping me? Well, your license plate light is out. See, those of us who grew up in these streets around here, we know that you either have something dangling from your rearview mirror, you didn't stop 100 feet from the stop sign, and your license plate light is out, and so I needed to stop you for that. Well, then why is so what happens? The dog again shows up on the scene.
Is it like a canine unit?
Yeah, a canine unit. So it's not the canine unit that stops her. It's the
They hold her and they call another
canine unit to get there. Let me finish.
Okay.
And so They go through this whole process. What's this on the floor? I see white powder substance. She said it's air freshener. It's carpet fresh, right? You know, I've been cleaning out my car or whatever and trying to keep the smell fresh or whatever. And so they search the car a whole 9 yards again, like smelling her cups that she got in the car, thinking she got alcohol in there. She's like, why are y'all harassing me? I just went through this about 2 or 3 weeks ago in Champaign. I don't even have no flashy car. Not that you can't drive a flashy car if you want to.
Why not?
I'm not involved in no illegal activities. Why are you harassing me? They give her a warning, right? This is an investigatory stop to see if you can find drugs or guns or whatever it is that you're looking for. But primarily, it ends up being some drug situation. So she gets a warning for that one, right? Because your license plate light is out, right?
Hmm.
So, you know, this issue goes on and on. That's cannabis, a piece that came up with cannabis. This other brother's in Champaign, riding with a friend, leaving the Legion one night back in December. The officer follows them, he says, for 21 blocks. They went back and counted from when the officer first encountered them until when he actually stopped them. So when they stopped the car, and this is a Charger with rims and tint and all that kind of stuff, right? So they profile the car, right? And they run the name and they know the guy who's driving. He's had a couple marijuana tickets in the past year or so. And so they say, well, based upon the fact that you've had a couple marijuana tickets and stuff, we're going to call the dog out. So because of marijuana tickets, you're going to call the dog and then have everybody get out of the car. And they had these people get out of the car and take off their socks and shoes, standing in the cold and in the snow to search them because of what amounted to what was supposed to have been a speeding violation.
Hmm.
Turned into an investigatory drug stop. They find 0.2 on the ground outside. They find a bag of powder cocaine with 0.2 gram dust in the bag. And now they have turned this individual's life upside. This person was a passenger in the car, right? So now, again, no one here, I am not advocating for drug use, but now you finna take the taxpayers' dollars and take somebody to trial, pay the jurors, pay the state's attorney, pay the public defenders, the judges, and everybody involved in this to take someone to trial over 0.2 of, I'm talking about it would dissipate in the air if you blew it in the wind.
Wow.
All from a investigatory drug stop. See, the stop was a claim of speeding so that I could search this car to see if it was drugs in this car, right? This is the focus of our police departments that is a...
It's really an attack on poor and minority communities. That's truly what it is.
Every single one of the people are African American.
Everyone. Yeah. Now, we just got a report in just last week on the heroin epidemic that we've been working on legislatively.
And you're going to use a compassionate, more appropriate approach for the white female,
the Schomburg daughter,
who is now having an issue with heroin. But when it was destroying our communities for years,
you totally
locked them up,
threw
away the key. Yeah. And I'm not going to act like there were no Prairie Center programs and all that kind of stuff, because there were some programs. But overall,
but there's no approach.
Super predatory, super predators, as Hillary Clinton would call us, need to be locked up and thrown away. And so you have this attitude towards policing, or in policing, towards people of color in particular, and you want to lock them up, and it's more of a punitive approach. So even if this person is using powder cocaine, right, they need help, not incarceration, not loss of job, loss of income,
housing, just the whole
public that's not what they need.
No.
That's not going to help this situation.
Yep.
No issues in the community, no background, no felonies, working person, right? And you're going to turn their life upside down. This is what your dragnet of this failed drug war does.
Well, the failed drug war is not as a failure as you might imagine. And so, as the report indicated, we don't see an uptick of white females being incarcerated for possession of heroin. And so for us as policymakers, and this past week, one of my colleagues on the Republican side moved a bill, an expungement bill, that Representative Ford, who's African-American, could not get a single Republican vote on just a month ago. She was able to move an expungement bill that ultimately helped people so that they would not have records, help clear their records because they have addiction issues, as opposed to, you know, the punitive side of the criminal justice system. So it's really an ongoing debate, and the black community, frankly, needs to get involved in it and really start advocating for your children and your future, or you really won't have one, because there is still a sentiment of the soft on crime if you try to help black communities, minority communities, and poor people, and, you know, tough on crime if you are passing legislation to continue to lock them up, provide more time, putting more criminal codes in. We fight this every single week in Springfield. So we want you to get involved in this issue, this and others. Feel free to call me at 217-359-5483 if you want to weigh in. I also wanted to shift us slightly, and we'll continue to work on
what's
this
phone number again?
217-359-5483. Well, you got to call the first one first.
359-6545. 217-359-6545. We always want to hear from you, your stories, especially
your
as they relate to
comments,
what we're talking about. If you have, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You want to finish? Yimmy, what you got for us, man? We trying to keep you in here, but
pretty
your
smooth.
Double Dutch is slipping. You ain't jumping in, man.
It was pretty
smooth. He liked turning the rope.
I was gonna turn the rope. I was gonna add on to that point. Yeah, people are just getting put away for the little amounts of dust, or like the stem thing you were talking about. When people actually really need help, say if they have an addiction, it's not helping incarcerating those individuals, because it's fairly easy to get those same drugs, I believe, inside than outside. I think it's easier to get it inside than outside. So when those individuals get inside, they still continue on with those addictions and those certain things they like to indulge in, and they don't find the help they need in while they're incarcerated. So when they come out, they're usually worse.
They are really, really struggling with what's supposed to be rehabilitation, but we can talk about that at another time. Another time. So
I just got one thing, I promise. It's really quick.
You're running my
really
time
quick.
Now, bro.
Really
you're running out my time.
Half my show. You have half. All right. There's a question to a state's attorney. Okay.
I'm not a state's attorney.
There's a question to a state's attorney that says, by what principles should a state's attorney decide who is charged and who is not charged at all? This is a question.
Okay.
To a state's attorney, right?
All right.
And or one who's running for office at this point. The focus of the state's attorney's office should be.
Is this the answer?
Yes. This is the answer from the person who's.
Who asked the question?
No, there's a person who asked the question,
okay,
and then there's a person
who answered it. Okay.
The answer is coming from someone who is interested in being a state's attorney.
Oh,
the focus of the state's attorney's office should be on protecting the people from violence, drugs, and guns.
Mm.
I'm just going to stop right there.
You stop right there, because that's a whole nother show. We'll come back.
But tell me, what we just got done talking about? You see, how are you going to protect people from drugs?
How you gonna protect people from guns? Tell me that one.
When they sell them all over the place, and
there's almost no real gun legislation control.
But I'm saying specifically related to our first 20 minutes of this conversation, we talked about drugs.
All right,
drugs have been here. They're going to continue to be here. A war on an inanimate object, the war on drugs, right, means that you should be getting rid of those things. And let me give you the four components, okay, that the drug war was designed to stop. It was designed to stop crime, death, disease, and drug use. Those are the four components that Nixon, your boy, and all of them, you know, put together. Crime.
That's what they say.
Did it stop crime? Because violence is off the chain, right? Right, and all the gun shootings and everything that we see going on around here related to drugs, right?
It's not really related to drugs.
No, half of them are. Half of the murders that have taken place in here are related to drugs. Two, has it curtailed disease in our community?
No.
All right. Has it stopped drug use in our community? No. So crime, drug abuse,
drug use,
uh-huh. Crime,
death,
and disease. It was supposed to stop.
Has
it stopped that?
No, it's deepened the divisions between the rich and the poor, black and white and brown. It squandered over $1 trillion in our economy that could have gone to rebuilding our infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And it's turned the country into a prison nation. That's what it's done. So we can come back and deal with that on a greater level. And I will graciously give 1 minute and 30 seconds to the next commenter before I transition.
Yeah, I had a quick just theory. It's just we've just been so blinded by media that when the war on drugs started, it was shown that African Americans or people of minorities use and sell drugs, and that was the quick way to get money and you know, help your family out. So I feel like minorities feel like, oh, I need to sell drugs. That's why I need to do this for my family. That's the way I'm going to receive income. So in turn, the police arrest these individuals and put them incarcerated. And we don't understand that's what they really want to do for us. They just want to get us incarcerated, even though there's plenty of other ways we can receive income. We can help our families out rather than just selling drugs. But there needs to be some kind of literacy in the black community to tell us that we don't need to do these things. We could still help our families out doing other things. I mean,
it's a big.
You said you was giving the last 32.
Yeah, you got. He's the last 32 seconds.
28 seconds.
That he got. Drugs. Period. If OxyContin is legal, if all these other different things are legal, they are drugs. They have side effects. They cause all kind of different stuff. Alcohol is
and
legal.
And they're addictive.
So who picks and chooses what's legal and what's not? And why do they get to pick and choose, Madam Legislator?
We will put that on our next show and really look at the drug schedule and how they got there at our next show. But we are going to the 9:30 hour. You are listening to WEFT 90.1 FM. And I continue to say the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. These are the views and opinions of Sister Carol, Brother Aaron, and Yemi, who are on the microphone this morning. I appreciate you, and you're welcome also to become an air shifter, to talk about things that are important to you. You can find out how to do that in our next training class, which is coming up May 3rd and 4th. To pick up an application, you can stop by the radio station, 113 North Market Street. Or I think the better way to do that is to go to weft.org and email us airshiftertraining@weft.org. And if that's not convenient, please call Vicki at 217-778-1664. And for the last 29 minutes and 54 seconds, we're going to talk about couple other things that's happened here locally. The slogan "Matt Rush must go" has turned into "Matt Rush is gone." Yes. Embattled officer Matt Rush has been fired by the Champaign Police Chief Anthony Cobb again, this time following an internal investigation of an off-duty incident that he was involved in. And just as he did 2 years ago in a move that ultimately led to his reinstatement, Rush will appeal this decision. His attorney said immediately after the news broke on Wednesday. So this is just last week. Hours later, the Illinois Fraternal Order of Police announced in a one sentence statement that Rush is that they have Rush's back, basically. Earlier Wednesday, Cobb informed Rush of his decision in two separate letters of discipline obtained by the News Gazette via an open records request. As his reasons for terminating Rush's employment, again, Cobb cited both an internal investigation stemming from a February incident now at a Champaign nightclub and state's attorney Julia Reese's recent statement that she no longer uses the officer or could as a witness. The city does not have any position available in which you would not be required to exercise your powers as a sworn police officer and would not be called upon to testify in criminal matters, said Cobb. Cobb declined further comment on Wednesday, saying the letters of discipline would serve as his statement on the matter. According to his letters, an internal investigation found on February 20th, 20 and 21, Rush was, quote, highly intoxicated at Fat City Bar and Grill in Champaign with his badge and off-duty weapon visible to the public. The investigation found that Rush represented himself as a police officer to the bar employees while showing his badge and gun. Quote, I am particularly concerned that this incident demonstrates a continued pattern of poor judgment and poor decision-making on your part, end quote, said Cobb, noting that Rush had violated three department rules during that one night out. Brother A-Dub, Matt Rush must go
to jail.
Let's continue down that thought. Listen, listen. This gentleman, not only had he violated the civil rights of four individuals, which has cost the city hundreds of thousands of dollars to date, but then he continues to conduct himself in a way that still puts him in a position to be challenged and ultimately fired again. I'm not quite sure how, you know, the arbitrator returns the gentleman to duty, and then the gentleman continues to conduct himself against departmental rules even after he's returned to duty.
Now, you know, this is one of the things that we love about community radio and having relationships in our community. I don't know if this applies or not, but I want to just read a quick text message that I just received. It says, revoke Rush's FOID card.
Revoke Rush's FOID card.
I mean, you know, there's so the FOID card is the identification or the sort of
license to carry a weapon.
And so, you know, with this type of a display, they're saying that this person feels that there should be some level of consequence for this type of behavior. And I don't know if this behavior amounts to the revocation of his FOID card or not. But, you know, people are thinking about this instance and this entire situation and this abuse of authority and this reckless behavior and wondering where does it lead at this particular point, right? You know, because even in the midst of all of this, of beating up folks, getting sued, getting fired, he's still out behaving in such a reckless manner in public.
In public, sure.
With his badge and his gun showing. So, you know, people are worried about what this guy is capable of doing.
Interestingly, the FOP of their attorney, Tamara Cummings, says she's going to appeal the decision just like the FOP appealed last decision, and we expect to prevail again. The basis of the firing, she says, is not justified. Firing is just not supportable.
What?
They haven't made the case, she says. Rush does have that lawsuit that he filed against the city alleging Cobb and Champaign County NAACP President Patricia Avery conspired to fire him the first time, which is ridiculous. The suit seeks $50,000 from each for economic and psychological damages, although...
No, he was already psychologically damaged.
Rush has been the subject of four excessive force lawsuits, and the last of which... is Precious Jackson is still pending as well, suing the city. Currently, they've paid out $320,000 in relationship to his excessive force. So I'm not exactly sure what the FOP is defending at this point, but, you know, hey, they have the right to defend their member if they can. Let's see what happens. This story will continue, but at this point, Matt Rush has gone.
That's for now. That's so, for now, at least.
For now, at least.
Sounds like he'll be back, though.
So we have, there's a lot of folks, as I rock my SEIU Service Employees International Union gear.
today. I'm headed to our meeting here soon for some training. So all those of you who are part of a BSW or FSW at the university, we're going to be at the clubhouse today from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. doing a negotiations sort of a contract team training, organizing training. You are invited to come out from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the clubhouse in Willow Springs. We will be discussing our current contract negotiations and other different tactics and or strategies on organizing. So we want you to come out, and lunch will be provided. So those SEIU brothers and sisters, y'all, please come on out and join us. But I've received some pushback from other union members, even within our rank and file, saying, how are you as a union president out advocating and supporting the firing of another union brother or sister? We're supposed to show solidarity. Look, I ain't support no criminal activities. All right. So you out here violating the law, kicking people's butt, abusing your authority, slamming women to the ground and kneeing them in the groin and all these types of things that you're doing, openly displaying this hostility towards people and flashing your badge and carrying your weapon all out in public and drunk and intoxicated. I ain't supporting that. You know, so if the arbitrator give him his job back, that's a part of the process. That's a different discussion. But I'm not going to support that. And you ain't going to pressure me into doing that. So it is what it is.
Well, we'll certainly keep watching this as it develops. I think the FOIA card question, there is. We do about 6,000 bills in 2 months. Amazingly. So there is a bill, and I can't tell you the number of it. But there is a bill that allows a family member where they believe an officer or any person who has the right to carry a FOIA card can request a court to suspend that person's FOIA card and remove that weapon from that household if they're concerned about the psychological effects on that person.
And he should definitely be have his stuff.
There is a bill right now that is I'm not sure where the bill is going, if it's going to pass or not. But these are great questions in relationship to, you know, the proliferation of guns in homes. And just a sidebar, I read an article just recently in relationship to the same thing. But one of the women who's huge gun rights activist organizer down, and I think she's in Georgia. She has a website, famous blogging person. I won't say her name at this point, but she has a infant in her car. The infant is about 3 or 4 years old. She puts a loaded 38 weapon on the back seat of the car. What? And the child ended up shooting her in the back.
How old was the child?
The child was about 4 years old in a car seat. So the child picks up the gun and shoots mom in the back with the weapon. What? In the car. And so she's an advocate saying that guns are safe for children. And her child shot her with her gun. So anyway, there's big conversations that need to take place about gun safety, you know, mass shootings, how we can, you know, really deal with some of this. I'm not suggesting that we should not allow people to responsibly have their weapons, but this is a little bit out of control. And I think that there needs to be some real discussion on this in the future. And we'll host a show about it. I read it already twice. It's really a topic of discussion. But anyway, we'll watch and see what happens with Officer Rush again. After the second firing, I've not spoken to anybody else in the community. I just got here yesterday, so we'll see what happens. But we want to remind you that you can come to our event on April 26th at the Accord. It will kind of kick off at 5. I'm sure we'll have a little food or something there. That program will talk about decriminalization of marijuana. And what we can do at the state and federal level, we'll talk about that on the 26th. And we want you to join us for that discussion. We have to decriminalize and save our community. So go ahead, Brother Yemi.
Quick announcement as well. The Office of State Representative Carol Ammons is helping out individuals who have been convicted of a misdemeanor or felony, and they're trying to receive a health care waiver application. And they need help with their process. We're helping out individuals, and we're hosting a workshop It'll be on a rolling basis. So if you need help filling out a healthcare waiver application, or you need just help knowing what to do and not to do, we're receiving calls right now. The event is free. Just need to call in 217-531-1660. And we'll be glad to help you with your healthcare waiver application process.
Let me just say the healthcare waiver is for people who want to work in the healthcare field. If you want to be a CNA, LPN, or nurse, or enter a nursing program, some misdemeanors or felonies preclude you from doing that without requesting what's considered to be a waiver from the Illinois Department of Public Health. That waiver process is specific, and we got great staff like Yimmy and Vasilia Clark who knows how to put that waiver application together to help you get your waiver done as much as possible at the Illinois Department of Public Health. And so if you call our office at 217-531-1660, we can help you and get you started. We also want to remind you that we are offering math tutoring with a volunteer from our community, that if you need math tutoring to complete some job requirement and you've been out of school for some time, like most of us, we don't remember that stuff. We are offering support for math tutoring to get you prepared for your job testing that you might have to go through. You can also call the office for that at 217-531-1660. That's math tutoring that we can find a way to support you, 217-531-1660. And it is our pleasure to serve you in that capacity. Please don't be shy about that. You know,
don't be shy.
People, you know, they want to do something, but they get a little discouraged by the process of having to test for different things. But we have great staff in our office that can really help you. If you know someone who wants to get into the labor union or they want to take a test at the university, we have someone in the office that is a professional who's been doing it for 30 years plus and can help you. So give our office a call at 217-531-1660.
Well, we have this amazing young man in the house this morning. He's a little rested today, ready to roll. Who is the next champion barrel racer gonna be performing at the county fair this year, riding his famous horse Dexter is famous around the building. Amir said he is going to ride Dexter to his graduation on May 20th. He's gonna ride him down Cunningham Avenue, having prancing down there and stuff. Talk to the people, brother Amir.
Go on in here and share some words of wisdom. I know you got a couple of them anyway. Why he act like he all tired or something? Come on, give me
a morning. I am tired.
Oh, boy.
And no, I did not say that. You said that. But, yeah, I was planning. He was planning on trying to get Dex able to walk down to my graduation somehow, but I don't know how.
It's not illegal. We heard it's not illegal to ride a horse in the city of Urbana.
Yeah, but I mean, he's still not ready for it, I don't think.
Well, we'll try to warm him up with the derby that's going on over there at the county fairgrounds and see if he keep you on his back or throw you off. We'll see what happens.
So what would be the problem with you? What do you mean he's not ready?
I mean, he still needs a little more help as far as, like, me riding him. He still needs a little more training. He's not that well broke.
Training to walk down the street or what?
Or be around people.
He knows some of the basics, but not all of them. Like, he still needs some more professional training.
So you're saying a horse with four legs doesn't know how to walk down the street? He need professional training to teach him how to walk down the street?
No, I'm talking about he needs professional training being ridden.
Okay,
his levels. He's talking so soft.
He needs to speak up. Put some bass in your voice and speak up. There's nothing wrong with the levels here.
Just Be clear. We try to talk about horses.
Speak clear, man.
We talk about horses all the time. We ask you to talk about your horse.
You might want to have somebody out there that might help you, or you could teach them how to ride and give them some more practice. What's up?
I don't know. Like, what you asking?
What do you need to do so that that horse can walk down Vine Street to your graduation on May 20th at Urbana Middle School? What do you need to do to make that happen?
Need to surround him by cars, I guess.
Okay, so he needs to be exposed to vehicles driving alongside of him because he hasn't done that before. And how do you train a horse to be to do that?
I guess you ride
him down the street by cars. See what he does.
No.
And so with the derby that's going on in our backyard, that's loud as I don't know what until 11 o'clock at night. He's in the barn, so he's getting used to the sounds. I wonder if maybe saddling him up while the derby is going on and walking him around, not on the track or nothing, but
on the outside of the track.
So he hears all that loud noise and stuff with you on his back. That might help you a little bit, do you think?
It may not help me, but it will help him. if he gets scared, I may fall off, but. That's nothing new.
Well, you don't have to worry about that because this horse only likes to graze and it's a lot of grass over here. We appreciate you giving us our lesson of horse riding for today. And we wish you the best in your baseball game at Dodds Park. I ask people to come. If you want to talk to me and ask me anything about anything, I'll be at Dodds Park today for several hours watching Urbana. What is the name of this league? Urbana Legion?
It's Legion Baseball. And this
okay,
is
Legion
the,
Baseball. Okay.
This is the older group. They're getting prepped to play in high school and stuff. So Amir is a switch hitter. He can hit from the left side. He can hit from the right side. He can play third base, shortstop, outfield, pitch. He's an all-star, y'all. All-star. He's an all-star.
I hope he's able to. He should be able to see that ball better with them very fancy sports glasses he got on there. Yeah, he can see better now. So I will be out at Dodds Park. I'm gonna go get some refreshments in case people want to come and hang out for a little bit. We'll be out there for a few hours today, so feel free to join us. And we are coming up on the top of the hour, Brother A Dub.
Yes, again. So it is my understanding that there will be a CU Citizens for Peace and Justice meeting today. There's going to be a special guest that they are interviewing. So those of you old school, old alumni of the CU Citizens for Peace and Justice, you should go to the IMC 202 South Broadway today at 4 p.m. and take part in a very important discussion that is going to happen. We are looking forward to watching the film Strange Victory. I believe it is. Okay. That's coming up on May 2nd at the Art Theater. It's a post-World War One type of film dealing with racism and dealing with the Tuskegee Airmen. I'm not the history buff, so I think I don't know if it's World War One or World War Two.
It's two.
World War Two. Thank you very much. That's coming up on May 2nd at the Art Theater in downtown Champaign.
Oh, May 2nd? Okay.
May 2nd. Yes, indeed. So, of course, city council meetings, Monday, 7 o'clock. It's always fun at the at the city of Urbana. We have a good time. It's controversial on a regular basis over there. Maybe because I showed up. I'm not sure.
Oh.
But the other thing is that we want to congratulate Ms. Mariam Arahim and the local Democratic Party on electing its first African-American to ever represent the local Democratic Party. She was successful in her bid for the chairman of the party. The first vice chairman is Wayne Williams, and the second vice is Eric Jacobson. Chris Storr won the secretary's position, and I believe Jennifer Gentry will be serving as the treasurer. So we're going to be working on putting our executive committee together and to continue to grow the involvement of young people in our party, to grow the involvement of African Americans and other people of color, and the diversity that represents Champaign County, that represents our society. So we're going to be calling on you, those of you who are listening, to join us, to help us to strengthen what we've already started here. And so, again, congratulations to you, Ms. Mariam Arahim. And thank you, Mr. Al Klein and Mary Klein, for all of your service,
for all that you did for the local party. It is much appreciated, and we hope that you'll continue to share your experience and your wisdom as we move forward.
I'm recalling in that same debate that I just got an opportunity to watch last night, where Senator Sanders said that we are open to a new Democratic Party that includes young people in the party, not just there as placeholders, but really as decision makers and direction for a new society that we want to build. And so I thought it was a very good response to one of the questions of the moderator about whether Senator Sanders is really a Democrat, that, you know, they like to throw that out. But he certainly has a record that shows that he is certainly more Democratic than what some of the other candidates have on their record as well. So you can always look at a person's record and see if they really undemocratic or not. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he did respond with a very inclusive statement that I think is just a symbol of his entire campaign, is opening up the doors for others, being inclusive, really trying to expand the idea so that it's not so corporatized and we start moving progressive policies that help the middle class and poor families in this country. So that was his response. And before I leave, I want to do my last little tribute to Stevie Wonder, if that's okay with you, Brother A-Dub and Yemi. Y'all got anything else you want to say before we close out?
I did want to bring up a topic, but it's a long topic.
A longer spiel.
Let's let the whistle a little bit real quick.
Well, so I try to talk about things that happen around campus during the week, and there's a lot of crazy things that's happened around campus. I'm sure there people are aware of the chalkings that have been going on.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Chalkings at La Casa, different frat party themed frat parties, different themes they have going on, and Facebook pages being made around the University of Illinois student campus. It's pretty tough going on. It's pretty tough right now. I think the page was called, can you enlighten me? What the page? It was like humans against apes,
Mexicans, and Muslims.
And Muslims. That was the Facebook page that was made. And there was chalkings at La Casa that said, build a wall, you know. And there was a frat theme party that had, in the picture, there was people, clearly white Americans, dressed in Arab culture clothing. And there was a few TSA agents in the photo as well.
You know, this disease of racism.
And I might add that there was a noose thrown on the table where some African Americans were sitting recently. I think just as recently as last week. It is my understanding that this person was working in the trades as a probationary, who walked into a workshop or into a shop area where other folks are at, where the table where African Americans are sitting, and proceeded to throw a noose on the table. Mm-hmm. This is the environment.
Yeah. So so like now we're seeing that the bigger spectrum of things, like the politics on TV and the views of the candidates right now, is starting to permeate into our student life.
Yeah.
And it's not supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be a place where we can come and learn and bond with the students we have, and we can't do that. It's more separating going on right now, and it's destroying the community.
Well, we want to possibly have a discussion on this show about how to excavate the spiritually dead and remove racism from the heart. How do we do that? Because that's basically where it is. And we need more time to discuss that. But we will continue to challenge the status quo and bring up ways to address these things. And hopefully on the next show, I'll be able to talk about, you know, my interaction with the university administration, things that, you know, I'm pushing them on, that I see from the local side to the government side around the administration of the university and some of these things. Believe me, I have these conversations with the president himself on what I know as a person who lives in this community and how that creates difficulty for us going forward. So we will bring this topic right on back in 2 weeks. And we appreciate you listening. I'm going to close out with a dedication tribute to Stevie Wonder done by Beyonce, Ed Sheeran, and Gary Clark Jr. And then the next voice you'll hear will be Paul Muth. So stay tuned. Thank you for listening to Higher Ground.
Thank you so much.
It is always my pleasure to join you, and I will be back in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So God bless you. I know. God bless you, and stay tuned.
How y'all feeling tonight? I want you to stand up on your feet if you love Stevie Wonder. If you love Stevie Wonder like I love Stevie Wonder, I want you to stand up on your feet. Hello, Stevie. How you feeling? Everybody say yeah. Yeah. Say yeah.
Yeah.
I think y'all could do a little bit better than that. Everybody say yeah.
That's a nice break.
I like my favorite songs.
I like that break. That's an early one too.
Yeah.
When did they do that? The tribute, February 17th of maybe a year or so, year and a couple of months. All right. My name's Paul Muth. I'm in with the show News from Neptune, the radio edit, and I've got some material from some of the usual sources. Yeah. Thank you. And kind of celebrating the political troubadour is coming into town next week. There's a lot going on. I just heard that Combatants for Peace, an active group in Israel of ex-combatants, were actually in town and may still be in town for the Ebert Fest. They screened a film about their activities, a documentary